Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, October 24th. Today, we're going to catch up with our good friend Leslie Eastman. We're also going to be joined by Katie Grimes, who's a friend of Leslie, and we're going to be talking about the politics of California. You know, sometimes when you're sitting here in Texas and you're looking at all of this from a distance, you ask yourself the question, what exactly is going on out there? Now, I happen to think that every state should decide its own fortunes, its own fate. Maybe they used to call that states' rights at one time, but I think it should be, there should be a lot of self-determination at the state level. So it's up to California to decide its own future. But a lot of times, you know, you look at California, and I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago at the American Thinker, and you have to ask yourself the question, is any of this helping California? Is any of this making any sense for the people who live in California when you have a state who seems to be motivated by only one thing, and that is the hatred of Trump. You have to wonder, how is any of this making sense for the people who live there? So we're going to get that today from our friend Leslie Eastman, who always seems to join us. Leslie, you always talk to you sometime around Halloween, so happy Halloween to you.
Yeah, happy Halloween. It's our annual Halloween show.
Yes.
Just wanted to, make sure people understood that things were going quite interesting here, and I figured telling about the terror of California politics would probably be enough of a Halloween special for your audience this year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we always do a Halloween show, but what could be better than a Halloween show with Jerry Brown and Maxine Waters? I mean, can I get any better than that? You couldn't dress up any better than those two, Leslie.
No. Well, I got to say, Florida's making an interesting play with that Frederica Wilson, the
yes.
sequin cowgirl. So I'm claiming cultural appropriation on behalf of the noble cowboys of Texas and the Midwest everywhere.
Right. Well, I always thought a red hat looked good on a woman until this lady started wearing one. Now I've decided I don't want to see any woman wearing a red hat. They've spoiled it for me.
Yeah, I was going to say social justice warriors have managed to ruin NFL football, and now they're ruining the all-American cowboy hat.
Well, before we bring in our very special guest, I do want to go back in history. Just 1 year, Leslie, just 1 year ago. Actually, I think we did a show about this time a year ago. And it was a year ago that there was a big, big graph on the New York Times saying that Hillary Clinton had a 93% chance of winning the presidency. I thought I would remind you of that.
Yeah, no, I must admit I've been savoring the 1 year ago today, memories and enjoying that we were among the few saying no, Trump was going to win the election and scoffing at all these fake news polls. And sure enough, here we are almost a year later, and I've loved every minute of the Trump presidency, and I'm looking forward to two full terms.
That's right. You know, I did want to say something very quickly before we jump to Katie, that John Zogby, you know who he is, he has his own polling company, and I had him on the show, Leslie, a couple of years ago, and we were talking about polls, and I said, John, you know, you must be frustrated with these polls that keep showing up wrong. And he said, yes, I am. And in fact, the pollsters are looking for a different way to do polls. They've come to the conclusion that most people have come to, that nobody's answering their phones. And there's also a tendency on the part of Republicans and conservatives not to answer questions from pollsters. So this is making polls very, very difficult to understand. And I think a lot of that went into what happened in 2016, where the polls were significantly wrong. I mean, when you have a poll saying, or not a poll, but experts saying that she had 93% chance to win, Leslie, that really tells you that somebody got it really wrong. I mean, I know you do consulting, and if you got it that wrong on anything, you probably would never get a job again on any project, Leslie.
Yeah, I don't imagine I would last long in my private occupation,
right,
if I had that kind of success rate. But again, it looks like, and we'll be discussing this later, that the people who support the Democrats and the progressives don't hesitate to throw good money after bad. And one of the things that pleases me most, well, actually, there's two things, is that Donald Trump continues to fight back, and Donald Trump continues to roll on with his agenda. The distractions are not going to sway him from carrying out as much of his to-do list as he possibly can. And I don't think they anticipated that he'd just keep on going with his agenda despite all the caterwauling.
You're exactly right. Now let's bring in Katie. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Katie. It is Katie, right?
Yes, it is. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Welcome to the show. I'm going to have Leslie introduce you for a second, but I wasn't sure whether to call you Katie or Kati. You know, women do have a way of redoing their names. So it's Katie, right?
Yes. Your way is much prettier, but yes, I'm Katie.
Okay. Well, yeah. Sylvia's got to bring that Cuban-American flair into everything he does.
Yeah,
I like
right.
it. Yes.
Yeah, I have to, you know, spoil it by making it a little different, but it is a beautiful name, Katie, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's very nice talking with you.
Well,
I'll
start with my usual introduction. If I am the queen of Southern California, Katie is the queen of Northern California. And whereas I'm like a mom with a cup of coffee and a computer, Katie is a longtime investigative political journalist and goes right into the belly of the beast by analyzing the shenanigans in Sacramento and the politicians who conduct them. Her writing is brilliant. It is in detail that is just astounding. Anybody who's interested in California politics should bookmark wherever she appears, and mercifully we do get her for Legal Insurrection occasionally because I cannot possibly cover all the insanity myself. She's got other venues in which she appears, including, I believe, Canada Free Press. Katie, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
That's where you've a very well-read and very popular article recently published that tied into the book that we're going to feature in the second half of this show, which is The Cat Donald Trump. So, if you have not seen her before, do check her out, Legal Insurrection, Canada Free Press, other Google searcher. You will be treated to some insightful writing about California and the state of politics in general. So, again, we're very blessed to have her as a guest. Because this is a very scary time. I'm not just talking about Halloween. I think we're in a very anxious time filled with changes and trepidation and terror. And to have her shining some light on the areas of concern, we are very, very happy to have our guest today.
Yes, welcome, Katie. I think it's absolutely great that you're with us. I'm sorry, you were going to say something. I had a couple of quick questions for you.
Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say thank you.
I just wanted to say a couple of quick things. Number one, Canada Free Press. I am amazed with that website because it seems like they do some of the best work about the United States. Do they originate in Canada, or is that just a coincidence, the name?
Well, they do. But what's so interesting is you look at their top, you know, their headline, Canada Free Press, and then the publisher says, because without America, there is no free world. And I think that's one of the things I love the most. Yes, the publisher does originate in Canada. She's, you know, like a 40-year journalist, has received numerous awards. She does live in Toronto now, but she has many, many American writers.
Right. No, and one of the ladies that used to write in that site, and she still does, is our friend Leslie, our friend Ileana Johnson, the Romanian conservative.
Yeah.
This is how I first found her, actually, years ago,
mm-hmm.
writing at Canada Free Press. So that's one. The second question, Leslie mentioned Northern California, and I was wondering if your reporting up there has gotten any more information about these fires. We understand that somebody set these fires, or the allegation. I want to make clear it's an allegation, that somebody set these fires. Is that true? I mean, that's a lot of damage for one person.
It sure sounds like it. What's so interesting is that we heard when the fires first started, there were local people who were interviewed by local news reports, and then just dead silence on this, that it appeared that all the fires started within about a 2-hour period. So to me, it has, you know, logistically probably more than one person, but it sounded like there really was something going on. And now immigration enforcement has come out and said they've got their hands on, you know, an 8-time deported illegal alien that they know at least started some of the fires. And I think it's just going to dribble out more and more that, you know, this was not one of nature's problems.
It is. Leslie, what are you hearing about it?
Well, like Katie, there are a variety of theories. One that NASA and NOAA jointly offered was a lightning strike, because there was a series of storms associated with that. And then the other one is due to the high wind, some power lines and transformers were knocked over, and that's another source. However, you know, we do live in the age of terror, and there are not unreasonable concerns that these were arson, and indeed they do have a suspect who they're investigating it, as Katie mentioned. So I don't think we can discount anything at this possibility.
Yeah.
Just keep on praying. I don't think they have the fires completely contained. Correct, Katie? What's the status?
Correct. That's correct. Apparently, there's one that's kind of really raging right now near Napa, and I saw kind of a blip on it this morning. And so, you know, CD, our California Department of Fire, is working very, very hard on that. And I know they've had a lot of local governments send their firefighters as well. So, yes, keep praying.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have to say, some of those areas, California is not all blue, and Katie can correct me, a good portion of those areas are red. And if you take a look at where expenditures have made, especially for infrastructure, you'll see a lot of our red areas have been neglected. So as we enter into the next campaign season, which will bring in the new governor, I'm hoping that we can convince our fellow Californians to focus on the infrastructure instead of President Trump.
Yes,
that would be lovely.
Let me ask you another. Yeah, Katie, let me ask you another quick question. We'll get to the California topic in more detail in a few minutes. But a question about Northern California. There, and Leslie hinted on that just a second ago. There is a movement, I believe, in the North to create a state called Jefferson. Right? Is that correct?
Yes, you're right. It's actually quite fascinating, and I know many of the people involved. It's a legitimate constitutional movement that this group is trying to pull. Right now, I think they're up to 22 states, 22 Northern California states, as well as I think 4 or 5 Southern Oregon, counties, not states. Counties want to join together to form the state of Jefferson. And they've done it correctly. They've gone county by county by county, collected the signatures necessary. Even some of the county's supervisors have signed on to this. They've presented these signatures not only to the proper authorities in the California legislature, they've also done this with the California Secretary of State. And thus far, the California authorities will not recognize it. In fact, I was told that the Secretary of State threw away the, you know, the stacks of signed petitions. So the state of Jefferson is now suing these authorities in California, some members of the legislature, the leadership. and the Secretary of State's office. And I'm not quite sure where the lawsuit is, but that's kind of where it stands. And it's a proper legal process.
Right. Leslie, any thoughts on that?
Well, I have no thoughts. I can only pray that it's the best result. People are very, very unhappy in this state, and the way Sacramento is essentially dictating how the rest of the state should go in terms of policy, and that great areas of our state have been neglected because they've been busy paying off their supporters is disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
If they allow Puerto Rico to become a state, then I think it's only logical that state of Jefferson be brought in to even the number out and even the politics
right.
out a bit. But we have little cliques and, you know, in Washington, D.C. and Sacramento, and everybody has a fiefdom. And so to change things this significantly, it's a real challenge. And I'm skeptical of success, but I was also skeptical Trump was going to win the primary too. So I can be dissuaded and not even proven wrong.
Right. And that's exactly right. I mean, a lot of things can happen, but I think you're right. I think a lot of people are unhappy that they're not being taken seriously. And these people are paying taxes. They're living in the state and they want to be taken seriously. And they're not being taken seriously in many parts. And I think that's what's driving this. It's not so much they want to separate as much as it is, hey, respect us. You know, we are here too. I think that's what I'm hearing, Katie.
Well, you know, it goes even beyond that. Yes, most people in California who pay attention to politics know they're not being taken seriously. And frankly, know that the politicians, the majority of them, I'll say, even on both sides of the aisle, really don't seem to give a hoot about what their constituents think. What's happening in the north part of the state is a representation issue, and this is really kind of the basis for their attempt to pull away. As you know, the thick urban areas like Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco have, 40 elected members of the legislature. The North State has one senator representing 1 million people and 2.5 assembly members, and that's it. So their big beef is not only does nobody seem to care what we think, we have no representation.
Right. No, that's fascinating. And I think just on that basis, you have to sympathize with the citizens of Northern California, because you're right. They're being completely uncounted. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll do a whole segment about California and the book and the stuff that you ladies have written over at the Legal Insurrection. So let's take a little break, and we'll come back with our two ladies right after we hear from my good friend Carlos Guedes, who's playing around town and doing extremely well.
This is Carlos Guedes, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
Carlos has been playing all around Dallas. He's a great friend of our show. I know him quite well. His wife, Luisa, as well. They're great friends. Originally from Venezuela, they're now living in the United States. He's a great musician, has released many CDs. The music that we play on the show is his music. And if you become a friend of Carlos in Facebook, you'll be able to see everywhere he's playing. And he's getting around quite a bit here in the Dallas area, building quite a fan base. So we wish him the best, and we thank him very much for letting us use his music on our show. Leslie, take it away.
All right, Katie, I'd like to invite our readers, after the show is done, if you're at all interested in California's war against Donald Trump, you can find it on Amazon.com. I have a review on Legal Insurrection. You can Google search it and, you know, find more links, I am sure. But I'd like to this next segment will focus on that book. And, Katie, I'd like to start by asking you what inspired you to write it, and tell us a little bit about your book's co-author.
Oh, thank you. Well, what inspired James Lacy and me to write this book was, it kind of started November 9th, 2016. We saw certainly the reaction of all the sobbing news anchors on CNN and MSNBC and got quite a giggle out of it at their unprofessionalism. But an equal amount of unprofessionalism was taking place almost immediately inside California's state capitol. The governor, the Senate president, the assembly speaker, numerous Democrats in leadership positions around the state, from the Secretary of State all the way to the state superintendent of schools, openly declared war on Donald Trump, the person, the president, his administration, his policies, his family. You know, it was no holds barred. And that's why we titled it California's War Against Donald Trump, Who Wins, Who Loses. And so what we do in the book is we take this really analytical look, actually. It's not full of opinion. It's full of data and analysis at the clash between Donald Trump's policies and California's very, very uber crazy liberal leaders, you know, who've mounted this resistance. And we know the resistance really started here in California. And we go through, we've got 745 footnotes in a book of only 126 pages. So I tell people, when you read this, you are armed with the facts of what's really happening in California. And we cover everything from the players. We name all the players, from Donald Trump all through, you know, California's state representatives, our U.S. representative, all the way down to Sacramento's mayor, who I am stuck with once again, Daryl Steinberg, who is the former Senate president. So, you know, we can't get rid of them even when they're termed out.
And I'm sorry.
I know, it's horrid. We cover everything from, you know, the failing educational system, sanctuary cities in a sanctuary state, as Leslie mentioned earlier, our infrastructure issues. You know, I live up here in the north with the Oroville Dam, which threatened to explode last year during the wintertime and our rains. That's not yet been repaired, and if we have another wet winter, I fear what will happen. And then, of course, we have liberal lawmakers who embraced Obamacare, expanded Medi-Cal and Medicare under Obamacare, and now are trying to impose a single-payer plan in California. You also, Leslie, mentioned terror risks in California, and we actually cover these in the book as well, because the mainstream media will not, and we've had numerous terror attacks in the state, as well as attempted attacks. And so we go through all these really, really important issues that, frankly, our politicians are not paying any attention to because they're so busy politically grandstanding.
Indeed, and could not have said it better myself. That is their focus, not on the citizens. So I think the best way to do this is because, really, if you need to follow California politics, if you're a member of the Trump administration, if you're a California voter, this book should be in your hands. It's right by my computer. When I blog about California Now, I refer to it for some interesting background information. Because, again, I learn stuff, and I follow this closely. But I think for our more national audience, there are a couple characters I'd like you to introduce, because these men intend to go on to more national footprint. So I'd like our friends out in the other 57 states to be forewarned. let's start with our current Senate head, Kevin DeLeon. What can you tell us about him?
Where do I start? So the Senate president, pro tem Kevin DeLeon, let me start with his real name. His real name is not the sexy-sounding Kevin DeLeon. He is actually named Kevin Leon. He changed his name to give himself a more ethnic feel, and I'm not denying that he has ethnic roots, but I'm just fascinated by we have numerous politicians who've done this in California. Kevin DeLeon, he is the current Senate president. He is also he's scary because I don't think he's a true believer. I think he's a politician. He was raised in very, very leftist politics in California labor unions. He was a community organizer in a labor union, and he kind of got his chops that way, which is very scary. We have, frankly, probably more than half of our Democrats in the California legislature right now came up through labor unions, whether they were union lawyers or just these community organizer types. He's been pushing very, very hard this climate change plan in California, which is killing businesses through these increasing regulations. Frankly, I think it, you know, they're meant to kill business. And I often say, if you were trying to destabilize and destroy a state, everything our Democrat politicians are doing is how you would do it. They have the roadmap. He also authored Senate Bill 54, which turned California into a sanctuary state when Jerry Brown signed the bill recently. And that, talk about a thumb in the nose in Donald Trump's, or in the war against Donald Trump, because we know that this is unconstitutional. It's illegal. Jerry Brown's a lawyer. He's our former state attorney general. And for him to sign this bill, I think he should be disbarred, along with everybody else in the legislature who signed on to this, who has a law license.
Absolutely. And again, this is, he's thrown his hat in the ring to battle Dianne Feinstein for her Senate seat. And as
yes.
I'm fond of saying, that in comparison, he's going to make Feinstein look like Margaret Thatcher.
He will. You're right.
Yeah,
he's very, very left, and he's become more left over the years. He's one of the members of La Raza and the whole Reconquista movement to, you know, take back California and give it back to Mexico. So that kind of shows you some of his Latino radical roots from there. He also admitted not long ago that half of his family are in California illegally. They are illegal aliens, and they also have fraudulent Social Security cards. So I'm kind of wondering, when he said that publicly, if that, I'm sure it's true, but I'm wondering about his own status. And so if he is in fact going to run for U.S. Senate, it will be fun to be digging into his background.
Oh, yeah. Now, let's turn to our attorney general, who I
yes.
think is even worse, Xavier Becerra.
Yes.
What can you tell about him?
Well, Xavier Becerra spent 26 years in Congress. Not many people had heard of him before Jerry Brown, our governor, named him to fill the vacant attorney general seat in California when Kamala Harris, the former attorney general, was elected to the U.S. Senate in Barbara Boxer's old seat. Xavier Becerra has been spending his time since he was appointed attorney general suing the president. And lo and behold, you will not read this in the mainstream media, he loses every single one of his lawsuits. So he's less of an attorney general, more of an activist. He is also part of the radical Latino movement here in California. He's a very, very liberal Democrat. He was a member of the Democrat Socialists of America. You know, he's bad news. He's just really, really a dangerous guy. And it's interesting because many of us believe that Xavier Becerra's appointment to attorney general had everything to do with the ongoing protection of illegal aliens in California. And that's really what all of his lawsuits are about.
Yes, yes. Now, turning to an article you just wrote on the Republican California's Republican Party Convention.
Yes.
You were treated to a speech given by former Trump counselor Steve Bannon, who now is the Breitbart editor.
Yes.
And I believe Steve Bannon's premise is that immigration can be the rod with which we beat the progressives back. And if California can get behind and form a grassroots army, the regulars, I like to call them the normals, can get our state back from these highfalutin progressives. Well, how is the speech like? What are your thoughts? And is there anybody on the Republican side who might offer a hope for the future?
Loaded question, huh?
Yeah.
his speech was delightful, and I think one of the I say delightful, as delightful as Steve Bannon can be, because he's all business, he's all seriousness. But what he did do for the 500-plus people listening to this speech Friday night is it really was a shot in the arm to the sincere activists on the Republican side in California and to the conservatives. And, yes, he did talk about this grassroots army. And he said he did address the fact that we need to continue supporting the president in his push to stop illegal immigration. Frankly, it's not immigration at all. It's, terrorizing our borders. And he said we can take it back. However, it's going to take an enormous amount of work by – and he pointed to the people in the audience. You can't sit here and complain anymore. It is up to you. You are now accountable to make this happen. And I think people really needed to hear that because in California we have – many, many Republicans, not just the 4.5 million that voted for Donald Trump. We have many Republicans who are very fat and happy and used to sitting around and letting other people do the activism. And what he was doing is calling them out and saying, sorry, folks, those happy days are over. It's time to get out your pitchforks and torches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Tea Party. What I found, and frankly, that's why I'm not a Republican, that the local Republican Party, well, first of all, one of their representatives called up my colleague and harassed her because she didn't like something that was said during a Tea Party rally. I personally, after having been, I came in as a Democrat, an independent Democrat, I've always had independent conservative leanings, but I was still a registered mm-hmm. Democrat at the time, thinking, other thought than other that maybe I can get the saner Democrat in the primaries.
Right.
And then we were told, or rumors were, on our Tea Party group that we didn't have a legitimate one because one of its founders was a Democrat, which belied the Tea Party movement, which was supposed to be above party. Republicans in this state, and I've heard dialogue before, people have the impression they're either out of touch elitist or they're evangelicals. And mm-hmm. so there have been several instances where people who've gone from being independent and were elected to re-registering as Republican and not being elected. So how can we offer, what do you think the best path forward is, besides the grassroots activism, which I think has been working in other states, because we seem to be seeing really good trends in the other states, but California doesn't seem to be quite catching up with people.
Well, you bring up some really good points, Leslie. One of the things that we know is happening in this state is that it is the Democrats in control who are deliberately keeping us divided. They're the ones that are into the identity politics. The rest of us could care less what color our colleague is or, what ethnic background someone has until they make it an issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this divisiveness we have in the state is being perpetrated mostly by one party. I think the way we move forward is we identify that most of the issues we're talking about and that we've even been talking about, right now, and, the chapters I talked about in my book, the economy, sanctuary cities, infrastructure, homeland security, education, rising crime, those are nonpartisan issues. Those affect everybody's kids, everybody's grandmother. I probably ad nauseum saying, look, folks, and I tell this to Republicans whenever I talk to them, Democrats' kids go to the same lousy schools that our kids do. We're all driving on those same horrible, horrible freeways that haven't been repaired or upgraded since Jerry Brown was governor the first time in the 1970s. We're all at risk if the Oroville Dam blows this winter. You look at the issues are not partisan issues. And I think if we continue to hammer that home, Leslie, I'm with you. Yes, I'm a registered Republican, but I describe myself more as a conservatarian. I have very conservative values in many areas, but I also, really appreciate, kind of the libertarian values as well.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's a Republican like you said, it's a term, but I think it doesn't adequately describe the spectrum that can be found among everybody. And it's because we don't have to have the same mindset, unlike our progressive colleagues that, you have to be for abortion, you have to be for transgendered rights, you have to be for this and that and the other thing, where you're just definitely more diverse. But, I can't encourage people enough along our lines is to look for the lower level local elections and begin to participate in whatever way they can. Zoning, school board, city council, start small and get entrenched and then hopefully eventually come up. But Steve, it's a long, long haul from where we're at, given the dynamics and given the fact that Sacramento drains so much of our wealth, and with that wealth comes so many of our choices.
Are you so right. I ran into an elected lawmaker this weekend at the GOP convention, and to protect his his place, he just shook his head and said, "It's going to have to burn down. We're going to have to let it burn down." And I was shocked to see this normally very upbeat person say that, but I'm afraid that is what it's going to take because of the, four decades essentially of really leftist leaning politics in this state.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe, and I covered some of this in an analysis where you have to get a permit to clear your brush, and you're only allowed to clear 5 acres of it.
Yeah.
And some people have 90 acres, a couple hundred acres. And so between this and, we'll say, the resources, water conservation, water resources, our neglected dams to start with, but, draining off waters for the smelt. I mean, the list goes on. And I think if I were intending to run for governor, I would just make our state's infrastructure my sole issue.
I agree.
That's enough right there. And I think what a lot of our other fellow Americans might appreciate is not everybody's aboard on the sanctuary city train. I think most Californians specifically are against it.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. You're right.
Let me jump in for a second, Leslie. I'm really enjoying your conversation. We're kind of running out of time, but I do want to ask a couple of quick questions, Katie and Leslie.
Yes.
I think that the comment about letting it burn down is actually not that far from reality. And the reason I say that, not literally burn down, I don't think he meant it that way.
No, he didn't.
but when you have something as mismanaged or as crazy as California, sometimes it's almost like Obamacare. It's imploding. And, I watch it from a distance. Obviously, I'm not there, but I watch it from a distance, and I see, for example, sanctuary cities. I've debated this several times on Telemundo when they invite me. And I simply say to them the following. I say, look, so you're saying to me that you want to live in a country where every city determines what federal law they're going to obey. And that they've never heard that before, what I'm saying, but it really hits them between the eyes. Because then I say, what happens when a school district says, we're only going to allow children into our school who can prove they're in the country legally? And then they say, well, you can't do that. I said, yes, you can, if everybody gets to pick what laws to obey. And then I turn around and I say, what happens when a county decides we're not going to issue any more same-sex marriage licenses because we don't believe in it? Well, they can't do that. I said, well, yes, they can. Because they get to pick. And this is, their arguments are really not very smart if you can simply put some logic on them. Sanctuary cities, it always comes up. And I say, well, who's afraid of a sanctuary city? Not me. If I get stopped by a police officer, they ask for my driver's license and they ask whether or not I have insurance. That's not that's what they do. And they do it to me as well as anybody else. And I think when you start, if there was somebody in California who could attack these arguments that way, I think there'd be a lot of Hispanics who would actually support that, because I'm not, I'm one of those who doesn't believe that Hispanics are as much into this illegal immigration issue as the media would pretend that they are. Because a lot of Hispanics are being hurt by these sanctuary cities. They're the victims of most of these crimes we hear about, Katie.
You're absolutely right, Silvio. I've been working with a kind of a coalition here in Sacramento of small business, a Latino small business group. And every one of them, I mean, absolutely every one of the folks that I talk to, they just roll their eyes. They're saying they just want to be left alone also. I mean, there's mortgage bankers, there's real estate people, there's, you know, small restaurant people. They just want to be left alone, and they're suffering under these regulations. They're the targets of crime. We have a huge presence of MS-13 here in Sacramento, and they're constantly under siege by these folks. So you're right. They don't want it. And Leslie's right that, frankly, most Californians don't want our state to be a sanctuary state. We don't want sanctuary cities because it's a general lawlessness. And the real reason that Democrats in this state are pushing this is they see these people as future voters, whether they're legal or not. And that is the
right.
only reason. They don't care about them. They plan on keeping them a permanent poverty class.
Right.
Yes. And in fact, that segues to the next segment. I really wanted to talk to you about the one thing that I think our fellow Americans should really know is the reality behind the myth of California's being the sixth or seventh largest economy. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your opinions on that, which ties into Steve Bannon's statement about the lords of technology.
Yeah, no kidding. It is just fascinating to me that I just heard Javier Becerra, our attorney general, on TV last night bragging that California is the sixth largest economy in the world, never ever acknowledging the fact that we are home to one third of the nation's welfare. We have the highest poverty rate, the state with the highest amount of poverty in the nation. And then when you adjust for our very, very high cost of living, not so much. You can't ignore the facts, and yet the Democrats constantly do. But they only just take that one tagline when they're on TV.
Absolutely.
What they're talking about, Katie, what they're talking about is GDP figure, right? They're just looking at the GDP, and they're saying
yes.
The California GDP is number six in the world or something like that, right? That's what they're
yes.
saying, basically.
Yes.
They're not
exactly.
looking beyond the numbers. I mean, Brazil has the eighth largest GDP in the world, too. But what does that mean?
Yeah.
They have huge sums of
yeah.
poverty. So you can't just look at the GDP. By the way, I'm not sure it's number six. I don't want to quibble with details, but
I don't think it is either.
Yeah, I think it's more like eight or nine. But anyway, that's just a detail. But the point is that the GDP number by itself just tells you how big the economy is. It doesn't necessarily tell
yes.
you the quality of the economy or what else. I do want to ask two very simple questions, Leslie, if I have a minute here. I'd like to get your reaction, both of you ladies, if you could just give me a minute on your reaction to the uranium scandal that has apparently broken out here over the last couple of – I didn't know anything about uranium. I guess I'm going to learn a great deal here over the next 30 seconds. But, Leslie, you're the expert on science, so tell me about – this uranium scandal that has broken out here with the Clintons. What's your reaction?
Well, basically, long story short, it's been known for quite some time. It just hasn't made the news as it ought to have when it was realized that the Clintons had been negotiating with people and getting special deals. Phil was invited to speak. There were monies flowing to the foundation. For those who would ultimately possess the rights to extract uranium from some mines, I believe, in Montana, and they would go to basically the Russians. Then the Russians can do whatever they are going to do with the uranium. And so we have our national American ore going to Russia, who, shall we say, we don't have the warmest relationship with. And yet they accuse Trump of collusion with Russia. I think it's a scandal that is enormous in scope, and I hope it gets the attention it deserves. But again, I am skeptical that it will. Katie, I'll turn it over to you.
Yes, Katie.
What she said. I have been following this story, and it is absolutely fascinating to me. I think what we watched with the Democrats, you know, beginning November 9th and the claims of Russia, 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 was one of the largest diversions we've ever seen in this country's history, when in fact they were so confident they were going to win the White House that they'd already begun, you know, illegal activities years into the, you know, or into the Obama administration. And then they got caught with their pants down. Donald Trump won. All of a sudden they started freaking out and having to try to create some sort of diversion, which turned out to be about as stupid as the a YouTube video is what caused the Benghazi massacre.
Right.
Yeah, just about as dumb as that. They're not even very creative with their lies. I have to say, I'd be a much better liar if I was in government.
Well, Katie, since you brought up pants down, why don't you take Weinstein? Why don't you take that that story?
Give me
a quick reaction to that. I mean, I always like to hear when Leslie's on, I always like to hear the lady's perspective. So give me your perspective on Harvey Weinstein, who, I won't say anything anymore about his pants down, but I guess go ahead and tell me what you think.
Yeah, what a vision that must be.
Yes.
Harvey Weinstein, you know, it was Hollywood going back for decades. The casting couch in Hollywood, people have been making jokes about literally for decades. This is nothing new. And obviously now we're starting to hear the horror stories of a guy like Harvey Weinstein. And it's coming out that there are many, many other rich and famous directors and producers in Hollywood that use these same tactics. On just a side note, doesn't it make you wonder if they truly had to cast people based on talent, what kind of movies we'd have out today? Okay, that's just
Yes. Oh God. I could exactly my thought. It's just like,
right.
Really? We had such legends. Betty Davis, Ava Gardner,
yes.
Right.
You know,
yep.
Rock Hudson, Cary Grant, so many wonderful talents. And now we get Brad Pitt.
I know.
Oh God, you know, it's just not fair, and we get sequel after sequel. And granted, some of them I adore. I love Thor, and you know,
yeah.
Ragnarok. I'm planning to go see that, but that will be the one movie I think I see all year.
Yes.
Hollywood has gone downhill.
It has.
And
it has.
Go ahead, Katie.
Oh, I was just going to say, along those lines, I think what we're seeing, though, if I can just kind of tie it all together, is all of these corrupt leftist institutions are beginning,
yes,
to crumble. Not just the,
right,
California state legislature, which is also rampant with sexual harassment, and you will start,
right,
seeing those stories coming out, but Hollywood, the university system, the NFL, it's all crumbling.
Right. I think the Democrats are going to regret the day they invented Anita Hill, because it's come back to them now. After all these years, it's come back to them. But Leslie, I want you to promise me that you're going to have Katie back with frequency, because I loved her appearance on the show today. And Katie, if you could maybe work with Leslie and try to get us somebody from the Jefferson movement up in North Carolina.
I'd
love
easily
to do a show about
that. Absolutely. That's a brilliant idea. Yeah. We'll do that for like our next show or something like that, because I didn't appreciate they had come so far, and I know they're being squashed. So let's,
right,
shine a little,
yeah,
spotlight on them.
Well, let's do that. And I know how Leslie's dressing up for Halloween. I mean, she's going to be somewhere between Cleopatra and some other goddess of Egypt. What about you, Katie? Can you give us a hint?
Well, there was a list put out of all the politically incorrect,
yes,
Halloween costumes this year. My favorite on it was The Wall. So I thought maybe I would dress as The Wall.
Okay. There you would. So, but is it just going to be the front? Is it going to be only a wall on the front, or are you going to have one in the back too?
I'll probably wear a whole wall.
Right. So your wall is going to be
a full wall.
So your costume is going to be 3,000 miles long, right?
Exactly. No, actually, I live in a liberal hellhole in Sacramento, so I thought I would answer the door with absolutely every piece of Donald Trump gear I can find in my house. That
well, please do
costume.
That and let us know how that turned out. And I would love for you to point out to one of your liberal friends in Sacramento that their city was actually named after the Catholic sacrament. I hope you can tell them that.
Yeah.
And then maybe that can spoil their day, Katie.
I will try. I like that very much.
Well, you know what they say, Catholics have so many sacraments, and I guess maybe Sacramento was supposed to be one of them.
Yeah, apparently so. We're okay. Definitely we're doing it.
Well, I think it's due for an exorcism. So, yeah.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with Leslie on that one. I think it's due for a lot of things, including that. Katie, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. It was really wonderful to have you, and I hope you'll come back. It was just absolutely great. I'm a huge fan
absolutely.
Of yours. I read your stuff, and now I'm a bigger fan of yours.
Thank you so much, Silvio. This was fun, and I just love being on with you and Leslie.
Yeah,
well,
and
thank you so
I'm
much.
Looking forward to seeing you when you come down to my realm in the South.
Absolutely, Leslie. We'll have a good time.
All right.
All
bye.
Right, Katie. Thank you so much. And Leslie, as always, you did an absolutely wonderful job, as always, connecting us with new people and new friends. And always grateful to you when you put these shows together. You're absolutely great.
All right. Thank you, Silvio.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Well, that was our look at California politics. A lot of crazy things happening in California, but maybe because things are so crazy, maybe there's actually a chance that change can happen. I'm beginning to think more and more that things are going so crazy that maybe something nice could actually come in California. It won't happen right away, but I think eventually people will begin to realize just how crazy it is, and maybe they'll want some kind of change. Maybe they'll want some kind of change. I sure hope so. Thank you for listening, folks. Have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Again, our thanks to Leslie for her wonderful work when she's with us. And we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.